Welcome to Snap Talk. I'm Venetia Butler. In a world on autopilot, this podcast empowers you to embrace your agency. I've been excited for this conversation because hands up if you're somebody who this does not pertain to. I don't know about if this is an age thing, but I find myself having this conversation with almost every woman that I am meeting right now in some format. I don't know about you.
As should be. And it's not an age thing, I always say.
Thank you.
It's an all-age thing, because even if you think it's far, preparation is always better than the 80% of women that only scurry and look for information when they are in it.
Sure.
It shouldn't be a thing.
Big difference, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So before we start, I am fascinated to know a little bit more about you. So let's hear all things you.
Wow.
Tell us about yourself. How did you get here and how are we here?
You're going to have to rein me in because authors will speak too much. But who am I? Xoli, I always say, originally from KZN, Pietermaritzburg, went to school there, did my tertiary education there. Then at some point, I found myself working for Disney World in the US for 18 months. And I think that was a great eye-opener for me to kind of let me know that, you know what, the world has got so much to offer. When an opportunity to extend came up and I was like, nope, I think I'd rather come back to South Africa, but rather travel for a living. Fast track, I ended up working for the national carrier as a flight attendant for 14 years. Very long in hindsight, but while I was in it, it didn't feel like it. And I started a clothing line also while I was there, did a course in image and lifestyle management. And I left in 2018 to fully focus on the clothing line. Fast track 2023, the book came about. And it just changed the course of my life. It fully immersed me to the menopause space.
So when you say book, are you referring to the one that you wrote?
Yes, I'm referring to the one that I wrote, which I'm sure we're going to speak about.
We are definitely going to be speaking about this proud author. We will be speaking about your book. Let's backtrack a little. I mean, we went from Disney to airlines to 14-year career. We were just talking offline earlier on how you blink your eyes and 14 years is gone.
Yes.
And you're like, wow. But I think over and above that, there was clearly an entrepreneur there. There was clearly an adventurous soul.
Yes.
Who wanted to go and sap life in whichever way you could.
Yes, ma'am.
And in my experience with you, that's still true of you. So talk to us about why the journey of menopause and when did you discover that this would be something that you feel is part of your life work?
Well, I always say that the whole menopause journey, it only made sense in hindsight. As I was saying that I started in the airline, I think it was 2005. So the first few years, great, optimum health, traveling and everything. Then all of a sudden I started experiencing strange symptoms. But because of the nature of the work, then it was always easy to put them off to one thing or another. I always make an example, for example, things like your insomnia. It's easy to put it off to time zone changes.
Sure.
Oh, I was in Australia. Oh, I was in the US. So that's why I'm struggling with sleeping. And then things like your hot flushes. I always say that my mom summed it best one time when she saw me like sweating bullets in December. And she thought that maybe I hadn't detoxed my system in a while. Because I mean, I was in my 30s. And I think most of us at that time never knew that menopause could happen that early.
No.
I wasted a number of years just coexisting with the symptoms. Digestive issues, I'll put it off to how the food might have been prepared, where I was getting it from. Only when I started struggling with psychological symptoms now. And when I say psychological symptoms, I'm not just referring to the brain fog. I had learned to coexist with the brain fog. But I'm talking when I was feeling the heaviness that did not have a word, feeling like I wanted to die because I needed this peace now, because these symptoms had escalated to the point that I felt like I don't know how to get relief. And when I was suicidal, then I always say, since I was not done on this earth, then the clouds drifted away and God said, nope, you need to find out exactly what has been going on. And then it felt like I was just jolted from this deep sleep. Then I started jotting down all the symptoms of the things that I'd been coexisting with for the years that had gone past.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're saying is those years, you being 30 and that, we didn't have these conversations.
I mean,
certainly
really
not, wasn't something I know. No. In my experience, nothing we ever spoke about. No. My mom had had a hysterectomy, you know, very shortly after I was born. Mm-hmm. So I had never known it or experienced it. And it was certainly not a conversation I ever had. You're in your 30s.
Right.
You're a black female in South Africa.
Yes.
And you've never experienced anything.
I've never had
of
no conversation.
Nature. In fact, was it quite taboo for you?
It was. In my book, I even share in hindsight that, I mean, when one now starts backtracking and thinking, like, have I ever had any conversations? I had never had any menopause conversation in my entire existence, except for hearing the older ladies sometimes mentioning the word hi-hi, and they'll be fanning themselves while sweating. And now I was like, they were having hot flashes, severe episodes of hot flashes, but then still there was no right name for it that they were using. Hence, they were calling it hi-hi. Other than that, I had no recollection of ever hearing anything around that.
And I want to stress somewhat the severity of that lack of conversation, because I don't take lightly or idly the fact that you got to the point where you contemplated suicide.
Yeah, a number of times.
And that to me is heartbreaking in and of itself, just in terms of the fact that in the absence of any conversation, in the absence of any dialogue, you must have felt so alone.
It was a very lonely journey. I mean, it was lonely before knowing what was happening. It was a bit lonely also, even when I finally got the answers after doing all the tests, after the consultations, and now having a name to the thing, which was premature menopause. Then armed with that knowledge, I'm like, I'm ready for the conversations. I'm ready for the support. I'm ready to walk the journey with other people. But then when I started the conversations with my friends, it was met with silence, because, I mean, they're in their 30s. They're still having children.
Can't relate.
They don't get it. Then on the other end of the spectrum, trying to speak to older women, they're looking at me with that look. Why do you want to speak about older women's issues? You know that you've been forward, you chacharach, you're speeder. And then for a while, I found myself suspended in a no woman's land, because then I did not know where I felt.
Too young to fit in, right, in the middle of all of this.
Yes. And that's when I had to carve out a new identity then for myself, to say that, yes, because at that time now, when it was confirmed in 2016, I was 38. I'm like, I'm 38. I've gone into this phase of life that is normally deemed to be for older women, but I'm not going to be embarrassed about it, because, I mean, another name for premature menopause, medically they call it primary ovarian failure, which already has got that negative connotation to it.
So let's go back for a second, just so there's context to age, like aging.
Yes.
I see in your book you do refer to an interesting stat that only 1% of South Africans fall into that early menopause category. Only 1%.
Premature menopause, yes.
Can you give us the categories, like the areas that we are defined by?
Okay. So when we're speaking menopause, natural menopause now, that is when menopause happens when it's supposed to.
And what is that menopause phase?
The menopause phase, it means that the woman's reproductive cycle has come to a complete stop, meaning that they are no longer going to be going on their periods. So your periods are done for the rest of your life, which can be a positive if you are done with having children and you were never looking to conceive.
Minimum time frame before you can be qualified menopausal?
It has to be a full 12 months without a period.
Right.
And sometimes women confuse the counting of this, because we do not have that clarity, as we say, that there's not enough education. So some women, after 9 months, 10 months, they think they've reached menopause. And then when their period shows up on month 11, they are shocked and think that they've reversed their menopause. But in the truest sense, they have not reversed it. They are just still in this transition that is leading to menopause. So a woman needs to count a full 12 months with no interruption to say that they've reached menopause. Menopause is like a milestone, and you can only count it in hindsight. You can't predict when you're going to reach it.
Right.
Yeah.
So from an age parameter point of view?
The natural ages is from 45 to 55. And then the most common age for menopause is 51, 52. And then as we explained that menopause can happen before time. So if it falls between the ages of 40 and 44, then it is early menopause. And then anything that is younger than 40, whether you're in your 30s, you're in your 20s, or sometimes even in your teens, because there's been very rare cases of girls going into it in their teenage years, then that is called premature menopause. And then there is surgically induced menopause, as you spoke about your mom.
Mm-hmm.
It can happen at any age, right? It's due to like such procedures. And then some women, due to certain medications, certain treatments, then they can go into medically induced menopause. And then the period, though, that is leading now to this whole 12 months milestone, the transition, it is called perimenopause. It is very important that we clarify all these terminologies, because it's easy to get confused when these conversations are had. It's like all these pauses, what is the difference?
So can I recap my understanding? So what we're saying is we can have what you call the early phase, early menopause.
Yeah, between the ages of 40 and 44.
Right. Yes. From 44 to around 50, 51, it could almost deem a perimenopause phase.
The perimenopause, everyone is going to go through perimenopause, because that's the transition that is leading to your menopause experience. Yes.
Okay.
So whether you're going into premature menopause, into natural menopause, but you are going to go into perimenopause. The difference is for women that will have surgically induced menopause, because then it's not natural. One day you were your whole individual, then you get wheeled into theater.
Got you.
And then that is why some of the women that go into surgically induced menopause, their symptoms are more severe, because they did not have that natural
transition.
Yes, natural transition.
Right.
And then before we move on, because that is the last part of this terminology that hardly gets mentioned. And I know that women that fall into that category always feel like, oh, we hardly get mentioned. Postmenopause. So after this milestone of 12 months, it's called postmenopause, and that's where then a woman is going to be for the rest of her life. There is no way that once you've reached postmenopause, then you can go back and say, oh, I'm perimenopausal. No.
Right.
You're postmenopausal for the rest of your life. Some of the symptoms that we're going to touch on that are linked to perimenopause, some go away. You might have new one. Some can subside.
So is there a menopause period? In general, and what I mean by that is 5 to 10 years. So if I've hit menopause, it means that for 12 months, one after the other, I have not had a period.
Yes.
Which now deems me fully in menopause.
And then immediately, then you are in postmenopause.
Immediately.
Immediately. Once you've hit that 12 months mark, you've reached menopause. It's almost like it's your birthday today. What's the date today? It's the 8th. It's the 9th. So if this is your 12 months today, then this is the milestone. Then tomorrow, you're deemed to be postmenopausal.
Right. And this is where there's such confusion, because so many times people tend to mock the phasing of perimenopause. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that is the phase.
Yeah.
And the day that it has been 12 months, you're now in post.
Yeah. As I say, like my birthday is on the 8th of July. My birthday, that's that. On the 9th of July, it's not my birthday. Done. So menopause is that milestone when you count your 12 months full. Then anything beyond, then it is post-menopause.
And symptoms can... Well, let's talk symptoms before we speak about post, because you said they can carry on.
Yes, yes.
And they can continue.
Yes.
But they will dwindle, I guess, at some stage.
Yeah, because... Yes. Okay, so firstly, the transition leading to menopause. The most confusing phase for most women, because... Some, their periods might just start becoming irregular. But some, that might not be the first sign, their periods becoming irregular. So you find that the periods are still happening. You just have given birth sometimes. But then, because your hormones, menopause actually, what it's all about, as we say that your eggs are done, you're no longer going to be going on your periods. And the female hormones, especially the estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone, obviously are at play during that time, especially the estrogen, which is responsible for our overall functioning as women. It is going haywire at the time as it's preparing for this final phase of our reproductive cycle, which is menopause, right? So as it's going haywire, since it's responsible for our total functioning as women, then it's going to affect how our bodies function. Hence, then we start presenting with different symptoms. Hot flashes are always ranking very high. Almost 80% of menopausal women will experience hot flashes. Then there's those that actually get the opposite, which is the chills or cold flashes. And then it's the weight gain, that stubborn belly.
That stays.
Yes.
Making it in the top two.
But I'm still eating the same way. And then it's the brain fog, the mood swings, the irritability, and vaginal dryness. Those are the symptoms that most women struggle
with. In that 50% category.
Yes.
So we speak about symptoms. Let's just recap.
Yes.
You said 25% are falling into the very little to small marginal symptoms.
Yes.
You said 50% are sitting in the sort of average symptom category, and then the last 25% which are sitting in severe symptom categories.
Right.
Can you share with us what you would put as minimal symptoms that you might not even know you have, and then put us in the 50% category and then take us to the extreme?
Okay. Some of the symptoms that women might have without really paying attention to, I mean, we've spoken about things like your changes in body odor. You wake up in the morning, you're still following the same hygienic routine that you used to, but you find that smack in the middle of the day, you feel like, what's that whiff?
Oh, wow.
Then things like increased UTIs, new and worsening allergies, migraines, things like your loss of balance, digestive issues. You find that during this transition perimenopause, women start becoming lactose intolerant, like things that they used to enjoy. Suddenly, they are no longer able to stomach. Weak and brittle nails. And sometimes it's easy to miss, especially because we live in the days when women normally are always having nails put on. So they hardly get a chance to see their own nails in their natural state. And if they see them, normally if they were to see that, okay, they're becoming weak and brittle, it's easy to put it off to say that, oh, maybe they file them too down, too low. That's why, they are the way that they are. And then, electric zapping sensations, feeling like you've just been choked by something, creepy crawly moments. You're checking, but there's nothing that is crawling on your skin, but you are feeling what you're feeling. Some women struggle with things like your frozen shoulder. And some women, they will talk about ringing in the ears. And when we say ringing in the ears, it's not necessarily also the same. It's been described that it happens in variations. For some women, it's almost like a humming sound that is happening. And you can only imagine that when sometimes these things are happening, you are going to start thinking, am I imagining this or not? For example, things like your phantom smells. You suddenly smell things that are not there. Like I'm sitting across you and I'm like, but why am I smelling burnt toast? Or is someone smoking, when you know that it's a non-smoking environment? Sensory overload becomes a thing. Some women will tell you that certain fabrics, I can no longer handle wearing them. When my child or my partner is chewing, it's like I just want to tell them to stop, because you can hear every sound, which can affect also then how people around you then relate to you.
Yes.
They want to start avoiding you because they don't know how you're going to respond to certain things.
Are you convinced that's a peri symptom? Because I can relate to someone chewing badly on any given day.
You know what? There is certain ways of us that are ways of being. Hence, self-awareness plays a huge role.
Right.
Because then you are able to tell then things that are changing as you're progressing through life. And that is why also something that maybe I should have mentioned when we were talking about the different ages of menopause. If you're younger than 45 and you're experiencing some of the symptoms that we've mentioned, you shouldn't just sit at home and be like, okay, that's confirmed, I'm perimenopausal. You need to go and do the necessary tests that are going to rule out any other underlying condition, because some of these symptoms can mimic symptoms of something else, whether it's thyroid issues, like the sweating or night sweats. Like some of the symptoms of TB are exactly that. Someone will be sweating even at night. So if you're younger than 45, definitely you need to do the test.
Can I just qualify that as well? There is the narrative that is, well, the most well-known narrative is there's no test for this. But you've just raised something and said, rather than testing for this, eliminate things that can be related that might not be this. Is that what you're saying?
So if you're younger than 45, what they would do, they do like your FSH test, which is like a follicular stimulating hormone. I don't want to get too technical, but they know the right test that they need to do. But they also include things like your thyroid and all of those things to rule them out. But if you're over 45, it's almost a given that you should be in perimenopause, because naturally perimenopause surfaces from 45 and above. So going to do tests for checking whether you are in menopause is almost like wasting money, because your hormones are expected to be fluctuating for perimenopause.
Got you. How do I arm myself then?
I always say informed, obviously, is always a thing. Read as much as possible, research as much as possible. And this is not just for you also to be as informed as possible, but that's also to help, because I always say when I compare 2016 to 2025, as we said, the world has made great strides in having these menopause conversations, the awarenesses and all of that. But we're living in a capitalistic world. So there's been other entities that have realized that this is an untapped market that is coming up with products that are geared towards menopausal women. So if you are not informed, it's easy then to fall for any product and every product that is promising you relief. But if you are clued up, then there's certain products that you're gonna look, read, and wonder if really you should go for it. So for example, there was this nightgowns that were targeted at menopausal women. And I remember seeing that promotion, and one of the people commented, is like, isn't it better than to just sometimes maybe sleep naked or wear something more, or like, what makes your products? Yes, we know that cotton, obviously it breathes better. It's good. It's recommended during this phase of life. And bamboo fabric, which is a bit costly. But now people can just slip in anything and say that it's menopausal, for menopausal women. And if you do not know what material to look for, then you will buy that only to find that, but it's just a synthetic fabric that is actually not going to help you in any way.
That's quite scary.
Yes. So being informed is very important. Also, taking ownership of saying that when it happens, because I mean, we're speaking to women that might not be there, but when it happens, to embrace it fully for what it is. It's a phase of life that nobody can run away from. Yes, maybe you can adopt certain ways, like certain lifestyle changes. If you are looking at yourself and you can tell that, you know what, my lifestyle really, it can do with certain changes, then do those changes so that you fare better.
Such as?
Prepare yourself. How we eat plays a huge role. We poison ourselves every day unknowingly, because the food that we're eating these days is full of preservatives. It's full of colorants, toxins, things that we do not need. We are the microwave generation. Like most of the food we hardly cook, we just pop it in there and it comes with its own radiation and all of that. Sugar, we were taught that fat is the enemy. But sugar, most diseases thrive on sugar. And sugar is not just about the hard sugar that we look at, but sugar is hidden in so many things, whether it's sauces, salad dressings, and all of that. Alcohol, caffeine also. Smoking is a big, big, big thing. Most of our, boxes are always warning about cancer. But really, they need to relook at also adding, because more and more women are smoking. Especially young women.
Would that include vaping?
Yes. They're smoking. And when you are presenting with these symptoms that are linked to menopause, that's one of the first questions that you get asked. They will check your family history, your autoimmune disease possibilities. And then smoking always comes up, because it plays a huge role. So if you're smoking really and you're listening to us and you're still far from menopause, I'm using inverted commas, consider cutting down, because really you are poisoning yourself. And then, as you said, alcohol, sleeping also. We are not sleeping well.
Can I ask you why alcohol has become so controversial? I've heard women go as far as to say that it will literally poison you in when you're in peri or menopause.
Because I believe these hormones at work, at play at that time, it's almost like the body is rebelling, obviously, against itself before you even add alcohol. And then you add alcohol into the mix. It's almost like you're adding fuel to the fire. Because, I mean, a person will say that, I mean, I used to be a 2 glasses kind of woman a night of my wine or on a night out. The same amount. But suddenly, your body is not able to tolerate it. The same way as we're talking about new and worsening allergies. Flowers that you used to be fine with, or certain plants that you used to be okay with, certain products, but suddenly you're no longer able to tolerate them because you've become more vulnerable because of these hormonal fluctuations.
So you actually develop an aversion?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So eating right?
Eating right. Sleeping. Sleep plays a huge role because that's the opportunity also for the body to repair itself, put itself together. And it's easy to, like, I think, downplay the role of sleep because we are not taught about the importance of these things.
What if you can't? What if you get it, you understand it, but you just can't sleep?
Then you need to be on a mission to find ways of being able to sleep, because a body was meant to sleep. For example, with me, when I stopped working for the airline, I had to retrain my body to sleep. And you can ask, like, how? Firstly, cell phone, because then your brain does not shut down because you're on the phone, you're scrolling, you're doing this. So I needed to teach my body to wind down in terms of that. I don't have a TV in my bedroom. Actually, I don't even have a TV in my house. But yeah, if you've got a TV in your bedroom, then move it to the other room. Make your bedroom a space to sleep. And your blankets, you know, most of us, I used to be such a cold person. I used to use a hot water bottle all year round. And it was a subconscious thing. I'll be struggling with hot flashes during the day, but I'll have my hot water bottle close by as a comfort thing. At night, getting into bed, I'll have my hot water bottle, struggling with night sweats. And when you're struggling with the night sweats and you already have a hot water bottle, that's a bad combination. And you still have that same duvet that is thick that you used to. You're wearing your pajamas as your normal way. So you need to relook also how you dress when you're going to bed, the blankets that you're having. And if you're sharing a bed with someone, it's time to be having those conversations, how you're going to navigate that. Because those are the silly fights that couples can have sometimes. Because, I mean, it's blankets on, blankets off, and then you're disturbing this person who's trying to sleep next to you. So
good sleep hygiene.
Yes, good sleep hygiene is very important. And sometimes women struggle with endless bathroom trips at night because you're so used to drinking your however glasses of water a day. But then now, because also now you've got bladder issues, you continuously have to moonwalk to the bathroom at night. So then you can say that maybe my last cup of tea or beverage of choice is around about 5 or 6, so that when I go to bed, then I would have had time to go to the bathroom, then I do not have unnecessarily disruptions to my sleep. 25% of women will experience almost minimum to no symptoms.
That was going to be my question,
which I always say, based on the work that I've been doing over the years, sometimes even the women that thought that they breezed into menopause, when they hear of some of the symptoms, they go like, actually, I did get that. It's just that I did not get what I was conditioned to expect, like the normal symptoms. And then 50% of women will get to mild to moderate symptoms, still show up for life. And then there is those that are extra special, like me, fall into the category of getting the worst debilitating symptoms. That's like 25%. So having mentioned the difference in all of these experiences, is always a thing that I stress, that we must never invalidate each other's experiences, because normally that's what you find. someone that maybe had minimal symptoms. And then they look at us going on about the awareness, the conversations around menopause. They're like, but you guys are being dramatic. It's just menopause.
Wow.
Just because.
They were the 25%.
Yes.
Can I recap that for a second?
Yes.
So what you're saying is you're saying that right now we're aware of almost 100 symptoms.
Yes.
Because we're so different and things vary.
Yes.
You're saying that there's three categories generally.
Mm-hmm.
There's a 25% of women who experience, did you say, as little as nothing to some?
Yes.
Then we have the 50% who sit in the average. I wanted to ask you, in your experience, what role has the emotional impact, and how much do we know around the emotional impact of menopause, such as, for example, vulnerability, feeling very scared, you mentioned alone, suicidal thoughts. How much of that has been linked in science to menopause or perimenopause?
As more and more research is being done, actually, it's becoming evident that it is very closely tied to it. Remember, menopause is very under-researched, understudied, even in medical school, doctors admitting to it to say that, you know what, unless if you're going to specialize in menopause, then they get maybe an hour's training on menopause.
Scary.
A sad reality. Hence, it's important that we band our voices together. Everybody that's got a role to play, whether at medical schools, Department of Education, even our government, everybody's got a role to play to make sure that we change this menopause narrative. If you look globally, I mean, the UK, the US, they are even discussing this in parliament. And that's one of my biggest wishes even here. I mean, we've got a Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities, right? But it hardly gets mentioned. I've never heard it being mentioned. Our Department of Health, if you go to their awareness calendar for the year, you've got all the months and different awarenesses and different dates. But you look at October 18th is World Menopause Day. There is nothing there. And this was introduced in 2009, but we're still like a long way off. But every change, I guess, it needs to start somewhere. And these conversations, the podcast, the books and all of that, hearing South African women's experiences might be just then jolt that our government and all the other decision makers need to really sit up and say that, you know what, this is an experience that every woman, if they live long enough, they're going to go through.
I want to speak about the South African experience.
Yes.
Your book really opened my eyes to some areas that I never even thought about.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak about your experience as a proud South African lady? You went into menopause at what age?
It was confirmed at 38.
Right, which put you in the what category?
Premature menopause.
And at that stage, no information.
No information.
What pushed you to the point of finding out what was wrong with you?
What pushed me, as I said, that one day it's like the clouds just drifted away and then the sun came out. And I'm like, what have I been going through the past few years? And the biggest one was me contemplating taking my life quite a number of times, whether sometimes driving and just wish I could let go of the steering, crash so that I can just die. Because, I mean, to me, I just needed this peace. And that's one of the most menopausal women will say, that they felt like they needed this peace. There was this thing that they don't have a name to.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah. In the UK right now, there's a case that's going on. A teacher, I think she took her life, I think it's a few years ago, but now they're backtracking because the signs are showing that she was menopausal, but she did not have the right support. At some point, she was even admitted at a mental wellness place, and the family was also on suicide watch over her. And then they thought that she was okay, but one day she took her life. And looking at the records and the things that she used to say, then they are almost sure that it is what led her to.
So how did you get that breakthrough?
My breakthrough, as I say, I'm a spiritual person, so I believe that my work was not done. So that epiphany that just happened, I did not even sit to overthink it. I just jotted all the symptoms that I had been coexisting with, quickly checked on Google what could possibly be it, and then it pointed that I could be obviously in premature menopause. Then I went to the GP. GP put me on some medication and decided that if the symptoms or things don't subside, then definitely I need to do the right test. But that he is suspecting that I have gone into premature menopause. That's when I went to do the test, and that's how then I got the breakthrough. And it's important to also mention that it plays a huge role seeing a qualified right practitioner. Because as I said earlier, that it's under-researched and it's understudied. Yes. That's why most women, they waste years being shunted, being prescribed wrong things and all of that, or sometimes being dismissed or being gaslit. Some women think that they're losing their mind. They think that they're imagining these things, because since they are hormonal, if you sometimes go rush to ER thinking that you're having a heart attack because of the heart palpitations, and then when the tests are done, everything comes clear. And then the doctor sometimes will look at you like, what is wrong with you? And then a woman walks away feeling like, oh my God, so I imagined all of this.
And you feel gaslit, and you've yes. never been more vulnerable.
Then you either stay away, or you go back again. But now your levels of confidence are no longer the same in terms of being able to advocate for yourself. Hence, I think even in the book, one of the parting shots, because every chapter with every symptom or everything that I mentioned, there's a parting shot. I say that sometimes go for consultations with a friend, with a loved one or someone, because it can get overwhelming sometimes, or you can doubt yourself. And it's time that as women, we take charge also of our health. When you go for a consultation, ask the doctor, what tests are we doing? What results are we looking for? What are the good results? What are the optimum results? And when they come back, also have a look, because sometimes doctors might miss some of the results.
For those listening, you write the book. It's called The Perimenopausal Globetrotter. Mm-hmm. What got you to write the book, and what was the inspiration behind it?
What caused me to write the book, I've stated the reasons. There are 19, and I'm not going to get into all of them, but if you get the book, then you'll see. Firstly, I wanted to share my experience fully, but still, it was not full on. I mean, you can only write up to so much. And it's important that I mention that the book is not just my experience. It's got academia, it's got open letters, it speaks to so many other things. But I wanted to share as much as possible, because, I mean, as I said, I'm from Pietermaritzburg, KZN. So while going through this, I was by myself. So I wanted my family to have a look into what I had experienced. My friends, because I mean, some of them were so shocked. They were like, but when were you going through all of those things? They felt guilty. They felt bad, especially that, I mean, they could have, in hindsight, have lost me to this thing without even being aware. Because then I ended up having this dual existence. Working as a flight attendant, you put on the mask, you show up for passengers, while inside you're breaking down. And that's what most women end up doing, having this dual existence, because I mean, you still need to show up for life, even though you're crumbling inside. So I needed to do that. I needed to have women that are not as maybe expressive as myself, or people sometimes feel like I've got chapters that I've labeled TMI, too much information.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to window dress my experience. I wanted it to be raw, as real as possible. I wanted a woman who's sitting there at home that does not have the right vocab, doesn't know how to articulate what she's going through, to have that aha moment and feel that she's not going through this by herself, because relatability is important.
Yes.
That's what I needed in 2016. So that is what really moved me to say that I don't want any other woman to go through what I went through. Nobody should feel lonely. Nobody should second guess what they are experiencing. Everything that they are feeling is valid. I wanted men to really understand their partners, what they're going through. Hence this chapter 25 that is purely dedicated to men. I wanted corporate SA to really understand the effects of menopause on women's careers, because I mean, we spoke that it happens from like the mid-30s all the way to 50s, and normally that's when women are at the peak of their careers. Others are really have gotten to these leadership positions. We spoke about some of the symptoms like mood swings, irritability, and then sometimes they can be labeled to be changing because of the position. Yes, that's what is causing her to be like this, only for it to be due to this phase of life. I wanted our government, I wanted the women that, because menopause through our African context also is still not really spoken about. Hence, I mean, with the research that I did, I did not find much. That chapter is one of the shortest chapters because we don't even have the right vocabulary, the right words for this phase of life. So when there is no way of articulating, then it's easy then for women to just suffer in silence because, like, where do I even begin to speak to my family about this? Especially because we think that menopause also is for a certain education bracket or a certain income bracket. While it's an experience that every woman is going to go through, educated or not, every woman needs to be able to know what this phase of life comes with. We've got 12 level official languages. Then we need to be able to converse to everybody in their comfort.
I want to speak about this because I think there were three things that you really brought to my, or really brought to my attention. The one being the fact that I love how your book is written with such passion. It's also very real. Also the sense of humor. A phenomenal sense of humor. You hold nothing back. I love how it's colloquial. I mean, I really, really love that. It makes me laugh. The second thing that I thought was very, very alarming for me is we spoke about the role of domestic workers.
Yeah.
In our country, who are looking after our children, who are working, and we're taking for granted, as you just said, it's not selected categories of women. This is every woman. And that was a big thing for me. The other thing was the fact that you said that when you were researching this at that stage, you didn't find one black representation or voice that could echo what you were going through in the whole country.
Yes. Interestingly, Facebook memories yesterday, I had shared back then, 2016, a photo of me and my friend. We were sitting in my car and we had just fought because I was hot. I needed to get the aircon going and she was cold because, I mean, it was June.
Yes.
And when I shared now to say that, menopause will have effects even on friendships and all of that, someone commented to say that, why are you rushing to it? I'm like, rushing to what? And she said, menopause. Because we don't think that it can happen this early. So,
domestic workers, what do we need to know?
Domestic workers, I always say it's important that initiate those conversations with her. For example, I spoke with this other dietitian lady and she said that, you know what, when I got home, I called her. Because I had noticed that when I'll put on the fireplace, then she'll start complaining. But I never connected that she could be perimenopausal or struggling with hot flashes. But because of that, then I set her down and then she told me. Because that's another thing, that when they knock off for the day to go to the bedroom to sleep, you don't know what they're dealing with.
Absolutely.
Whether it's the insomnia and they're expected to wake up in the morning, show up. And we know that if you have not slept well, then probably you're moody, you're irritable, you're all of these things. And you think, oh, why is she being so nasty? Why is she giving lip? And she does not know how to explain what she is experiencing. So it is important to every woman that is listening to this and every man that is listening to this also, because I always say men coexist with us as partners, as leaders, as colleagues and all of those things. It might be the cleaning lady in your organization that is menopausal, struggling with joint pain. She used to be able to clean the offices like 4 in less than an hour, but suddenly she's struggling with joint pain, moving furniture around. She's struggling with fatigue that she can't explain. So her performance is not the same. So these conversations and the knowledge is important to everybody so that as that male leader, if you're noticing those things, you can have that right, that amount of compassion, of understanding. If an organization, for example, then is menopause inclusive, then it's easy then to also then be able to support even them, even though they are deemed to not maybe sometimes.
And also you're removing assumption. Right? Knowledge is power, as you said, being informed and not assuming that this is not applicable to you because it's something you won't experience.
Yeah.
In your book, you speak about the fact that you have a very supportive husband who was and has engaged on a level that I thought was quite remarkable. Supportive of your hot flushes, you said he could sniff them out better than most. talk to me about the role and what kind of conversation should we be having with our partners?
We need to
and
mask
when?
Off.
As when should
early,
we have this?
As early as possible. If you're listening to this, I'm going to say that again. As you get off, then strike the conversation. The sooner we do, the better. Because also, whether you are far from it, But it helps when both of you are prepared for it. You know then how to navigate it, and the shame and the stigma that is still tied to it, you've addressed it, because that's another reason that most women don't speak about it. Because of that, we always say that women's value is tied to their reproductive abilities.
Right.
So I always make an example that cue me, Oli. Say, I'm still single, hoping to have children, and then premature menopause happens. Then you're still going on dates, you're meeting all these potential guys. When is the right time to bring the conversation up? I'm always saying that the sooner the better. And then couples that are together, the sooner also for them. Because also men, once they've been armed with information, sometimes they are quick to notice the changes before the woman. I always say sometimes when you are in a thing, you don't see, because you're so consumed, you are in it. But then your partner can be the one that picks up certain changes to say that I've noticed that you get like this and that and that. But obviously, manner of approach plays a huge role. It's just like, do I look fat in this kind of conversation? It needs to be approached with the right dignity, the right timing, and all of that.
Because am I right that this also influences largely sex, intimacy, in a relationship?
Yes.
You spoke about dryness, you spoke about those type of areas. Mm. And to your point, you know, it is about having that conversation and allowing them to be part of this rather than isolating them and leaving them feeling like they've done something wrong.
And also it's important that we mention that as we're getting older, the men that we're coexisting with, they're also getting older. They're also going through their own changes. Their testosterone levels are also decreasing. So they're going through their own physical changes, the emotional changes, the psychological changes. I mean, as you just said, that some women, like even intimacy, gets affected, struggling with vaginal dryness. Your partner, touch wood, he's struggling with erectile dysfunction. You can imagine how this also then can affect that level. So if couples have conversations beforehand to say that, I mean, this phase of life comes with all of these changes, but we must vow that we're going to walk the journey together. Because even simple things like you might not be getting things like your vaginal dryness, because as I said, not everybody gets these symptoms, but you find that you're struggling with weight gain that affects your self-confidence, your self-esteem. You used to be fine, but suddenly now you're no longer confident, and then it's gonna affect how you guys are going to be with each other. I spoke about fatigue. If then you wake up, you prepare the kids, you have to go to work, come back, cook, do everything, and then at the end of the day your partner is still expecting you to give him undivided attention and all of that, and the last thing that you want is exactly that, because you were operating on your bare minimum due to your struggles with fatigue
already.
Then it's important to have the conversations to say that, you know what, I would appreciate a little assistance. Maybe the kids can chip in to do this. Maybe they help you with the chopping and the peeling, or they wash the dishes, but so that you are then having lesser on your plate, then you can still be able to focus on your partner. But most women do not have those liberties, hence they feel so overwhelmed.
And it can lead to them feeling quite depressed and lonely and alone and vulnerable and reaching out. Let's speak about the role of genetics. I think I find a lot of women tend to go to their mother first and go, when did you get it? and what am I due for? Mm. Is there a role genetics plays?
I believe, and science is always changing. At some point, it used to be a thing like you need to look at how your mother fared, then it will give you an idea. But even with things like your periods, things like pregnancy, I mean, you can look at how they fared, but it does not guarantee that your experience is going to be like that. It's good to have an idea, but it's not like a confirmed guarantee. For example, I love real lived experiences. I've got this mother-daughter duo from my gym. The daughter breezed into menopause. The mother struggled, like, okay, the grandmother, because now she's a grandmother, but she really struggled. And it was so interesting to see the mother being the one that struggled versus the daughter, to the point that she ended up having to go on hormone replacement treatment. And when she got on it, they had to sit the grandchildren also down to say that, you know what, granny is struggling with this phase of life. So when she is sometimes being like this, and sometimes maybe she's shouting at you, it's because it's part of what she's going through, but she's taking this medication which is supposed to help her. And them being kids, at some point though, they'll take advantage of that when she's shouting at them, and rightfully so. They'll be like, oh, Coco, have you taken your medication today? But it, like, these are the real lived experiences that show us. For example, in my case, I went into it before my mom. I look at
that's crazy.
Yeah, very. My aunt, she's late. She never had children. In hindsight, I always ask myself, did she never want to have children? Or maybe did she go into premature menopause?
And therefore couldn't have children.
And could not. But because the conversations. So we'll never know. And then, as you say, we look at our mother's side of things. We hardly look at the paternal. Then some of us also, we only know one side of our family history. Like, my dad has never been in my life. So I wondered also, like, how did the woman from that side of the family fare? So it's important that we understand as much as possible, but also leave that room of understanding that, you know what, ultimately, there is so many things. Like, we can be from the same genetic makeup, but so many other lifestyle factors also come into play.
Into it. So can I ask you, you know, I'm sure you get asked this a lot, so forgive me for repeating what's coming, but symptoms and treatments. There's the controversial role.
Yeah.
We talk HRT, and I'm not asking you to sort of go the doctor route, but, you know, is there a go-to?
When it comes to...
to HRT or not?
And I think that's how I even titled the chapter, right? I always say it's important, firstly, to understand your struggles, your symptoms for yourself first. Because addressing this phase is multi-pronged, multidisciplinary. There is lifestyle changes that can help to really alleviate some of the struggles. Because as we said, that we knew almost nothing when it comes to how to take care of ourselves. So if you do and adopt certain changes, you might find that certain things actually subside and you're able to cope better. Stress management also plays a huge role. We are coexisting under immense stress. And that's why you find that some women, when they've reached what they term like a burnout, and then they go away for like 21 days on a wellness space, and then they just unplug, and you know, most of the things go away. And then they come back feeling whole all over again. But then it's like, what do you do when you come back? So it is important to approach holistically the
what
phase
is in
of
your
life.
Control.
What is in your control? Hydration, saying like everything that goes dry can go dry, but you find that you're also not hydrating enough. You find that you're not, you start drinking water, like you're hydrating, it will make a difference. And talk therapy also, because I mean, suffering in silence, it's like you're poisoning yourself indirectly. So talking is important, seeking spaces of treating that. Ecotherapy plays a huge role. Goes back again when I say that when you've hit that part, then you have to be admitted, and then they teach you things that have always been there naturally. Yes, there is like the supplement route to look into, but also there's the natural route approaching this. And then with HRT specifically, and now they call it MHT because they say that hormone replacement treatment, you can never really replace a hormone, but then it's menopause hormone treatment, not what? Replacement. Yes, you know, they're always doing research. So I've been on it. I was on it for almost 3 years. And then for my own personal reasons, I was like, you know what, I would rather approach it the holistic route.
Can I ask, did it work?
Some of the symptoms did subside. For example, the hot flashes did go away because they used to be so severe. One thing that I will say, like with any medication, just know what you're getting yourself into. It's your responsibility. The side effects, every medication has got side effects. So it's not your doctor's decision for you to get on menopause hormone treatment. It needs to be you. In my case, my gynae also told me these are the options. Go do your own research and then make an informed decision, because ultimately it rests with you. And it's important also that we touch on, obviously, there was a phase where I'm going to say HRT for the sake of this conversation, because that's the terminology that most people are used to. HRT had gotten that back slack because of the research and all of that. And then women shied away from it. And then now, 2025, it's almost like there is this big mission to redress that, to say that HRT is the way to go. I say no medication is without side effects, because right now it's almost like HRT is painted as the miracle thing to take for menopause, like it's going to make all the symptoms go away. There's no one miracle anything when it comes to menopause that is going to take away your symptoms, all your struggles and all of that. Because even if you are on HRT, but it doesn't mean, like, if you're struggling with things like your weight gain, that now you must continue also eating anyhow. You still need to invest in your fitness also. And if you're not sleeping well, then the body is still going to do what it's going to do. So it's a multidisciplinary approach, as I said.
So what I heard you say is, this is not, to exactly to your point, a one-size-fits-all.
No.
But what I'm loving is knowledge is power.
Yes.
You get to decide which route you go,
yep.
But you wouldn't almost isolate one.
No.
There's a space to be played for the organic part of it, the eco, the therapy you spoke about. What I wanted to ask you, you know, what I find quite amusing about perimenopause and menopause is when ladies can actually laugh at themselves.
Yeah.
And that they find there's humor in it.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, the flip side to this is when we can laugh.
Yeah.
You spoke earlier about women.
Yes.
At some stage, almost not being kind to women.
Mm-hmm.
How can we band together as women? Let's speak specifically in the context of South Africans. And how can we support each other better?
How do we best support each other? I always say, take everybody's experience for exactly what it is. They don't have to convince you. I'll make an example. When someone is saying that, oh, I'm not feeling well, sometimes people will just like not take you seriously. But if you walk in bleeding, they see blood, then everybody rushes into action.
Yes.
It shouldn't be like that. If someone is saying, I'm struggling with this, you need to take their word for it. And then also find out, how best may I support you? And this is not just to women only, but it also goes to men. It's never a blanket approach, because as we say that, I mean, even if I'm struggling with a hot flush, but maybe what brings me comfort might not be the same thing as what brings the next person comfort. So it is important that the support is individualized.
Let's go back to 38-year-old Collie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She's scared. She's alone. She spoke about suicidal thoughts on many occasions.
Mm.
If you could go back and speak to that woman, knowing what you know now, what would you have said to her?
I would have said to her, at the earliest that you see changes, sit up. Don't shrug anything off. Go seek help. Knock on doors. If it means that, I don't know what you need to do, but be heard so that you can know exactly what is happening. And also listen to your gut instinct always. Our gut instinct is always speaking, but sometimes we're quick to, to quieten it, whether because of fear or sometimes, like me, I don't like doctors. I don't like medication. Normally, I would just shrug things off, but fortunately, I've always been a healthy person. So that is important. Seek help. Listen to your body. Don't brush things off. You save yourself unnecessary struggles. Maybe I was not even going to get to the point of being suicidal.
Sure.
If I had went and sought help at the earliest.
You spoke about the fact that we are not having enough conversations about this. And, you know, in lieu of the fact that it's so topical across the world right now,
mm-hmm.
it made me sad to hear that in South Africa, we're not where we need to be. So speaking to everybody out there right now who's listening, both men and women, what role can we play in making sure that there is a voice in this country, that we are heard, that they stand up and listen, and that this is something that is tabled and gets the attention it so desperately needs?
It is said that an experience that every woman is going to go through is still swept under the carpet. But then it starts with us as women first, to bend our voices together. I always make an example when I speak in corporate SA, which has been a struggle sometimes to get into, to say that back then, there never used to be maternity leave. Women never used to be in the workplace. Then they got into the workplace. They realized that at some point they're going to fall pregnant. They need their job security when they've gone to give birth and then come back. Hence, we are reaping the benefits of that now. Now we're the generation that needs to take the step further to say that women are staying in the workplace. Menopause is happening earlier than before for a number of reasons. Now, organizations need to make sure that they also cater for this last reproductive phase for women, because they're losing talent. Women are just falling through the cracks because they do not know how to ask for the right support. Because sometimes if they do, then they are not listened to. And they can only be listened to if we continuously make more voices heard. I always say that since 2016, and now we're 2025, I'm still one of the most recognized voices and faces when it comes to menopause conversations here in South Africa. But it should not be a only movement. We need more and more women that are going to say that, yes, it is a phase of life that everybody's going to go through, but we are stepping up. We need to amplify our voices for the change to happen. We need the Department of Education to include this phase of life in the school curriculum, so that the next generation, they go through life already, their school career, knowing that this is the final phase of the women's reproductive lifestyle. Then also it's going to help to raise also a different kind of men that are going to grow up knowing exactly what this phase of life comes with.
Yes.
And also we need to understand that because even corporate, they shy away from this conversation because they think like it's going to be a costly exercise already. They feel like all these adaptations that they need to bring into the workplace is costing them. But you look at most organizations, most of the staff is women. So you cannot look at corporate SA and say that they can do away with women, because I've had a man that says that maybe women then needs to stay at home.
I heard you speak about education. I couldn't agree with you more. It has to start there. I also have to look with the lens of the workplace in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
We need to relook wellness days. You know, these. There's yep. nothing, no criticism around the way it's been done, but have we evolved?
No.
And are we being inclusive? And are we going, this is a topic that is not secluded, don't reserve it for Women's Day only,
yep.
but this is a topic that is going to empower your workforce. You spoke about burnout, fatigue, exhaustion. You know, we are not preserving, we are not conserving energy when we're not using it to the best, or the knowledge to the best of our ability. Mm. So shout out to you. And I am going to raise my hand to the challenge.
Mm.
I think that you're right. It cannot be your movement alone. It needs support.
Mm.
It needs engagement. As a woman, I've heard you say, band with me.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not try and win the war of who's had it worse.
Yeah.
Because there's better, there's worse. But what there is we're all going to share a version of it. At no point did I hear you say 0%. I heard you say 25, 15, 25. You're blessed if you're in the 25 category, and you need a lot more support if you're in the latter 25 category.
Yep. And I know most of the time people think menopause is such a heavy subject. It's all doom and gloom, but it's not all doom and gloom. If you are informed, actually, it teaches you so much more about yourself. For example, you learn to take better care of yourself. I mean, we spoke about food, how you eat now, how you take care of yourself, your sleep, your movement, your stress management, and all of that. So you are reinvesting in yourself. And then periods are gone. So you're no longer struggling with period pains, PMS, and all of those struggles. And you can wear whatever that you want to wear. You invited to an all-white party. You're going on holiday. You're swimming. You don't have to worry about your oopsie moments. And also the calm that comes with it, because when you're still going through the cycle, the hormones are all over the place. But once you get to the post-menopause side, things stabilize. Then you are more into yourself. Hence, then we need to look at it and with the thing that, you know what, after the struggles and everything, there's something to look forward to. There is positives to
light
it.
At the end of that tunnel. Yes. We are delighted to have you be a keynote speaker at the Women's Day event on the 1st of August, Resonant Women. I am delighted to share with you that Corley will be sharing more about this. She's a keynote speaker at our event. Thank you for saying yes. Thank you for raising your voice on a topic that matters so much to all of us. If you could sum up your journey and your passion for this topic in a sentence, what would it be?
In a sentence.
It's your on the spot moment.
I'm going to steal from that byline.
Do it.
Always turn your lemons into lemonade. That's it. Always. Always. In anything, in everything that life brings you, there's always a silver lining.
I love the optimism. I love the empowerment. I want to thank you for being a voice. And for those who don't or do know her, she is not just a voice. She is energy. She is optimism. She is positivity. She is such a light. And I want to thank you for being that. It is always a pleasure to speak to you. It's a gift to have you be a voice in our country. Thank you for being our voice. Where can we find you?
Where can you find me? Firstly, I'm glad that our paths crossed. I appreciate you. And
you're
I know
welcome.
That we're still going to make a whole lot of positive impact
we're
in different spaces,
just
right?
Getting started.
Yes, yes. Snapping my fingers. On LinkedIn, it's Xoli Madlala. On Instagram, it's Mask Off with Xoli. Then on TikTok, it's Redefining Menopause Africa.
Great.
And my podcast is coming up soon. Because we need more voices. So I need to be on the other side and hear more stories, more experiences.
I can't wait. Mm-hmm. I can't wait. Great to see you today. Thank you for bringing it as you always do. I appreciate your energy and it's been so good to speak to you. Watch for this. Our lovely lady is going to be there on the 1st of August.
Yes, yes, yes.
Resonant Woman. She has a lot to say.
Please.
Don't miss out.
Come through. We're going to have fun. We're going to turn this menopause elephant in the room to a colorful unicorn that, you know what, we're going to walk away feeling recharged, energized, ready for it. And ready to thrive through
I
everything.
I can't wait.
Yes.